In Chicago, two comedian skeptics named Andy and Art were mysteriously abducted by the illusionary mastermind and conspiracy theorist known only as Mr. Bunker. The following serves as a record of Bunker's attempt to convince non-believers of the truth about conspiracies and paranormal activity. Andy and Art give an uninterrupted presentation and verdict on the plausibility of these offbeat topics, delivering what they call the whole enchilada. Will Mr. Bunker convince these two skeptics any of this is real? Will it convince you?
Welcome to Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast. As always, I'm your co-host, Art Stone, and with me, as always, is your co-host, Andy Hart.
Hey, Art! Hey, Bunk Funkers! Welcome to another thrilling edition of Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time Podcast.
Andy, you're like a... I don't know if you're more of a pirate or like a...
I don't know Randy. Either. It's a little bit of whatever you're thinking.
No, you're very pirate now.
Oh, dee-dee-dee.
Andy, I gotta say, you are looking delicious.
Well, I am wearing a suit made entirely of whipped cream.
You are looking scrumptious. I could take a big old bite out of you. I could take a big old bite out of you,
Andy. Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, I smell good. I use butter to moisturize my skin. I sleep on a bed of herbs. I am constantly... dribbling myself in salt and condiments salt. Like barbecue, mustarda. I am greasy, I am slimy, I am sticky, I am sweet. I am the culmination of all of your hunger and desire.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. Bunk Funkers, I mean, is your mouth watering as much as mine? Maybe your nether regions too. You know what I'm saying? Come on.
Oh, yeah.
Andy sounds scrumptious. Bunk Funkers, I don't know about you. I want to take a big old bite on him.
Hey, Art, who are you? Who do you think you are? The Queen of England?
What?
Yeah, because... IDK, if you knew this or not.
IDK.
But the Queen of England, goddamn cannibal.
The Queen? Not about the Queen?
Not even a fine young cannibal. An old fucking cannibal. She's old as shit. Goddamn.
Goddamn. Well, how does the Queen, I mean, that's the topic of today's episode. How does the Queen have such youthful energy? How is she so exuberant in her old age?
We've all seen it. We've all seen her out there. Strutting around like a 24-year-old.
Playing basketball at the Celebrity All-Star Game, slam dunking on Kevin Hart.
Driving Range Rovers off of ramps in some sort of a Red Bull-type competition.
Yeah. The Queen has energy. We know that for a fact. And today's conspiracy, today's topic, which, by the way, comes to us from a bunk funker.
A bunk funker.
Who submitted this on Instagram, Rose.
Rose!
Thank you, Rose.
Rose! This was everything but the thorn.
I've heard of a kiss from a rose, but a conspiracy from a rose?
Rose, this topic petaled its way into our hearts on the little bicycle. And thank you for sending it in.
Thank you so much, Rose. And if you bunk funkers just are so damn hungry, you just can't wait to get your all that conspiracy, that whole enchilada on whether the Queen is a cannibal and the history of corpse medicine. Very, very fun topic today. And you just can't wait to fill your gullet with all that that whole enchilada. You can always check out the show notes. There will be a timestamp to when the research begins, because first, Andy and I need to talk to you about what's going on in our lives. Two daddies.
Raising our family. Our undead Sasquatch teenage son.
That's right.
Peon Musk. And our adult baby, David Crosby.
That's right. You know, obviously we've been having a lot of fun. We're family men now. Mm-hmm. Family first.
Family first.
That's what's important to us
family
now.
First. That's our That's our slogan. That's our motto. We wear t-shirts every day that say family first.
That's right. And God fucking help you if you try to cross our family in any way, mm-hmm. shape, or form. And Andy, I can't think of any TV channel or network mm-hmm. on the planet that is more family focused than TLC.
I mean, TLC literally stands for the Loving Your Family channel. That's loving right. your family is hyphenated, so you don't have to have separate letters.
I originally thought it meant the long croissant.
The long croissant.
But I was wrong. No.
Different place. That's a bakery in Brooklyn, and they have delicious croissants 30 feet long. This TLC is a channel known for...
Family.
You know, I think in the 90s, it was known for Pappy Druitt and Pappy Land.
I don't know what that is.
You know, it's been known for all sorts of human interest television.
It's family focused.
Yeah, family focused.
I mean, it's really, I mean, My family, Strange obviously, Addiction, John and Kate plus eight. That was a family focused show. Nothing bad ever happened to that family.
No, that family.
Honey Boo Boo?
Honey
family
Boo-Boo?
Focused show. Nothing exploitive about that show.
The beauty
it's about
of
a family.
The beauty of TLC is that it showcases these highly functioning families that are role models for the rest of the world. And that's what it's no wonder to us that TLC approached us and told us we'd like to make a show about your family.
That's true. And we were hesitant at first, but mm-hmm. then we kind of looked at their clientele and we said, you know what? TLC is never going to exploit what looks like freaks, like total fucking weirdos. And, they're not going to exploit us in any way, mm-hmm. shape, or form that we have some kind of atypical family. They've never done that before in the past.
Yeah.
They're very family focused on that right. show. Obviously, you have I don't know, that one show.
Oh, yeah, I know that show.
They just have a lot of family focused programming. And it's program, and it's you know, it's just we just knew that they weren't going to exploit us in any way, shape, or form. So they approached us. Some producers sent us some mail to the bunker that said we want to make a show called My 600-pound Adult or My 600-pound Teenage Undead Sasquatch Son.
Yeah.
Which is obviously a show about our lives and how we handle Elon Musk, our teenage undead Sasquatch son.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we know, as Art said, we were very sensitive to the idea that TLC would, to the idea that any television network might make a show that would exploit us to be the source of mockery.
That's right.
For regular people. I think the fact that it was TLC reaching out really assuaged those fears
yeah.
for us. We felt very comfortable. We recognize that we're not the only two daddies who are trying to raise a 600-pound teenage undead Sasquatch son. And
we're the only members of that Facebook group, but I think more are on the way.
Yeah. Well, these things take time to spread. People have to share it. But I think the real thing is we know we're not the only daddies struggling with this, with raising an undead teenage Sasquatch son. This is a way for us to help other people in a way that we've never been helped, but we don't hold a grudge against humanity because we have to figure everything out ourselves.
Right.
We accept our roles as pioneers, as light bringers mm-hmm. to the rest of civilization. You know, Art and I are a little more enlightened, I think, than most people.
Yeah, I would say so.
We're good parents. We're good people. And I think that everyone could benefit from seeing our lives on TV.
Plus, they're going to pay us an exposure, which I just think is great.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, obviously, I mean,
I tried to pay my check at Pizza Hut in exposure and I got thrown out. Oh, boy.
Well, you had a different definition of exposure. You exposed your penis.
They did tell me they would edit all of the penis shots out of My 600-pound Teenage Undead Sasquatch Son.
Well, you know, we're very free and open in our family. And sometimes, you know, Andy sleeps in the nude.
And sometimes I wake up in the nude.
You wake up in the nude and he's going to make breakfast for the family.
I make breakfast in
the
nude.
He's making breakfast nude. It's just going to happen.
There's nothing wrong with frying bacon in the nude. There's nothing wrong with...
Well, you're also a completely hairless and mm-hmm. Polished, shine, marble-looking humanoid.
Yeah. I have no hair to catch fire. I am perfectly greasy already, so it really has no impact on me.
We did have to sign some legal documents, which, again, you know, I'm not here to read legalese. I've had enough of legal documents for lifetime, and it was stuff about, like, you know, hereby you will all be referenced to as the total fucking freaks and, like, all this stuff. And I was like, blah, 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 whatever. Okay,
yeah, standard boilerplate.
This is boilerplate stuff. You know, obviously, I got a little into it. You know, maybe I got a little too, I don't know, maybe I kind of got a little too into myself now that we were going to be this big TV star. The cameras start rolling. Yeah, I started dressing up in, like, Ed Hardy stuff. You know, I kind of gelled my hair. I had spiky hair. I would go out late to these clubs. You would kind of, I would come home late. You would be asking me, where have you been?
Yeah.
I'm just going out to all these clubs, hanging out, you know, kind of living up the, TLC star life.
Yeah.
And I think it worked out a lot. A lot of people were kind of like, who are you? We don't know what that show is. Eventually, I learned that, yeah, the show hasn't aired yet. So they, a lot of people, I guess, didn't recognize me yet, which I kind of learned the process of a TV show is different from a podcast.
Yeah, yeah. They don't record it immediately and release it. It's got to go through the whole editing process. I mean, it did lead to a tense encounter between Art and myself on the season finale.
That's true.
Art was out clubbing, and it was nearly 8:30 p.m. I'm starting to get worried because that's way past my bedtime. So I decide, okay, the boys are in bed. Baby David Crosby is sleeping in his waterbed.
Submerged. In a tank of water, wearing scuba gear, as he is to sleep.
As is the best way to have a baby sleep.
Babies are born in water.
They feel more comfortable in water.
Yeah.
Peon Musk has burrowed into his pile of forest trimmings that are in his bedroom. So, you know, I'm getting worried about Art. I don't know what else to do. It's late. So I did the only thing that a daddy can do. I locked all of the doors and windows from the outside so that neither baby David Crosby nor Peon Musk could get out.
Yeah.
And I went to look at every nightclub in a 50-mile radius to find Art. And I found him.
Yeah.
At Cheezers After Dark.
Yep.
The number one nightclub.
Grilled cheese enthusiasts.
Grilled cheese enthusiasts.
Which I am.
Which Art is. And so I stormed into the club. Cameras rolling.
Yeah.
I was hot. I mean, yeah, I looked sexy.
Yeah.
And I stormed into that club.
That's right.
And I said, stop the music. And there was a record scratch and a grilled cheese fell out of somebody's hand onto the floor and it made a sound.
And there I was partying it up with a bunch of other daddies, which made you very jealous.
Made me very jealous.
I was hanging out with other daddies at Cheezers.
I started screaming and breaking things.
Yeah.
And eventually, to calm me down, Art had to take me outside of Cheezers nightclub. And, you know, Cheezers is like most nightclubs. It's off the side of a road. It's not within the city limits anywhere.
Yeah. It's in an unincorporated part of town.
Right, unincorporated part of town. Nothing around.
Held in someone's backyard.
Right,
it's a nightclub.
It's a nightclub. You know how nightclubs work, bumpfuckers. Yeah. And, I mean, of course, as I am wont to do, I threw myself down a ravine to prove a point. I blacked out. And then I don't know what happened. Here we are again in the bunker recording studio. I can't wait to see the camera footage.
Yeah, I mean, you got thrown down a ravine. You know, obviously, I turned around and said, well, I guess that's over with. I guess, you know, there is Andy again with his hysterics. You know, obviously, I mean, this is nothing new to daddies like us. There's always one hysterical daddy in the group. And Andy is wont to do. He's wont to just go for drama. He's going to go for the big thing, like throwing himself down a ravine and then making it all about himself and his injuries and all his broken bones and his lacerations and his, you know, his internal bleeding and his organs and all that bullshit.
I always ask them to wire my jaw shut so that I can only eat through a straw.
He does.
Just to make people feel bad for me.
And then, so I decided, you know what, fuck this. I'm going back into Cheezer's and I'm going to have a good time. Camera's still rolling, you know, and I'm just double fisting grilled cheeses left and right. I don't give a fuck. I mean, I'm getting fucking crazy tonight. I'm getting fucking crunk. Daddy's gone wild. Might as well have been. I should have called up Daddy's Gone Wild. I mean, I already got cameras on me. What can I say? I love the spotlight. So I'm double fisting cheesies and all of a sudden I'm getting real woozy. I think I just had a little bit too much grilled cheese that night, Andy, and I passed out. Woke up here in the bunker.
Wow. So many people have probably had that experience at Cheezer's nightclub.
Yeah.
Too much cheese and they pass out.
You know, I couldn't help but notice that the cameraman for the TLC show looked very similar to somebody who we know, but I couldn't put my finger on it.
I don't know either.
He looked very familiar.
Yeah, and it's what's weird is that normally with these types of shows, you expect there to be a production crew.
Yeah, like a full crew.
And there was just one
sound guy.
One person.
There was just a guy with like an old like Kodak from like 2006. And mm-hmm. I thought, I guess cameras are getting a little bit smaller.
Yeah, and it was one of those with like the shotgun mic like attached to the camera. So the sound, I'm sure, is not that great.
I'm sure. Well, it was an old like Kodak disposable.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, is incredible that you could shoot TV footage on a Kodak disposable these days.
Yeah. I don't know.
Camera technology is incredible.
I'm no photographer. I'm no auteur, so I don't know. Yeah. I don't keep up with the technology, but I mean, I don't know. This guy just, yeah, he had a very familiar like air about him.
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of a weird musky odor that was very triggering for me, but yeah. I don't know why.
Yeah, and the sound of him yelling like, action, cut, that's a wrap, mm-hmm. take a five. Craft, you know, craft services, and stuff like that was like very familiar, very, very strong sense memory there with that guy. But anyway, I too am excited to see the footage. Yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I think it's going to be great. I think we're definitely going to come out looking two very strong daddies.
Yeah, I mean, for anybody out there who's trying to raise an undead teenage Sasquatch.
Yeah.
You're going to want to watch this because you're doing it wrong and we're doing it right. And I think it's really going to help you to see how two experts in the field of raising undead teenage Sasquatch children do it.
Well, you know, speaking of footage that people just can't wait to see in here.
Yeah.
We got a bunker alarm to give out to somebody.
We have a very special bunker alarm today. We are ringing the bunker alarm today for our newest patron.
That's right.
On Patreon. This is a bunk funker who made the choice to give back to the community by going to patreon.com/MrBunkerPod and agreeing to become a patron of the show.
That's right.
We are so grateful, and we hope you will be too for our newest patron, Marisol.
Thank you, Marisol. Welcome.
Marisol, thank you so much for becoming a patron.
That's right.
In your honor today, what we're going to do is we're going to make use of a very sophisticated piece of technology called the BunkTech Bunker Alarm 3000.
Yeah.
The BunkTech Bunker Alarm 3000, of course, allows us to play a perfectly synced alarm sound for you in honor of your patronage of the mm-hmm. show. So, Marisol, for you, I'm going to start looking for an alarm here. You know, bunk funkers, we've turned up the sound on the Bunk Tech Bunker Alarm 3000, so you should be able to hear me actually working on it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, jeez. Oh.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, there's so many options.
Wow, lots of different finger motions. Swipes, swoops, points, clicks, slaps.
Gotta give it a little love, you know?
Oh my goodness. Oh, Jesus.
Oh, here's a good one.
Okay.
All right, Marisol. Art and I are going to count down from three. Obviously, with such a high-tech piece of equipment, this is totally unnecessary. It just wastes everybody's time. But Art and I's time is, I mean, worthless. So yeah, we don't care. We love to do a countdown. It gets us horny for alarms. So without further ado, Marisol, thank you so much.
Yeah.
This bunker alarm's for you. 3, 2, 1.
Wow.
Wow, what an alarm. That was an aggressive one.
Yeah, very aggressive.
Marisol, thank you so much for becoming a patron of this show. Bunkfuckers, if you have the means and the desire, please do what Marisol did. Go to patreon.com/MrBunkerPod and become a patron too. It helps us keep creating great content. And you also get access to Andy and Art Debunked, our exclusive Patreon-only show with guaranteed at least one extra episode per month.
That's right. That is right. Thank you again to Marisol. And yeah. You know what, Andy? Thank you again to Marisol. And
yeah.
You know, I'm famished, Andy, after all this bunker alarm talk and all this telling about the TLC show.
Yeah.
I could really go for a bite.
Yeah. I wish there was a place to get some jerked meat around here. You like jerked
but not
meats?
Just any kind of jerked meat, Andy. You need a certain kind of taboo jerked meat. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah, I'm ready to jerk a human.
Yeah, we're ready to jerk a couple humans with today's topic for sure, because we are talking about the theory that the royal family, specifically the queen herself, might be a cannibal, but also filling you in the whole enchilada
on the, great metal, heavy metal band Corpse Medicine.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that a real... That seems like, if that's not a band, I mean,
for anybody, Cannibal Corpse.
Yeah, for anybody out there listening who is in a metal band right now and is thinking about what to call yourselves, consider Corpse Medicine.
Yeah, you can have it, and we'll just ask that you pay us a little bit of royalties.
Yeah, 50% lifetime earnings. Yeah, we came up with the name, just, you know. You could just make your name Corpse Medicine presented by Andy and Art.
That's true. That's very metal.
Very presented metal, by. Yeah. Corporate sponsorships, very metal. Yeah.
But without further ado, this is the Queen a Cannibal? ? The History of Corpse Medicine. Here on Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast.
Yummy!
Me bunk funkers. This week's topic is bloody dench. And after Andrew and myself bring you the whole fry up on the topic, you'll be pissed as fuck and knackered.
Best not to be too pissed and knackered then, bunkies. Cause there you is having a slash in the loo, and you feel a nibble on your arse. What's all this then? You say, turn round, and then Bob's your uncle. There she is, the queen herself, having a nibble of your arse.
Normally, I'd be cuffed to bits over a cheeky gilf having a nibble on me arse. But a royal? I'm gobsmacked. Absolutely gobsmacked. I mean, that's all a codswallop then, isn't it?
Bloody hell. If it was you, Art, I'd say she'd be biting more than she could chew. But some believe the queen herself might be enjoy eating human flesh. It's true! So let's dive in, shall we?
Hey, get out of here!
Oh, you fucking limey bastard!
What's all this then?
Oh, you cobbled me knobbers!
Go on, get!
Oh,
me bollocks! Ooh!
Oogie doogie!
Ugh. Sorry, bunk funkers. Our twin cousins from England are visiting, and they decided to try and record a topic themselves.
Where do they get off? God, the whole fry up? What the fuck? It's their damn whole enchilada around here.
You fucking limey idiots, get out of here.
You hear me?
Ugh, bunk funkers. our pesky British cousins who are in town visiting from England aside, they actually were right about one thing. Today's topic. Even though I think I and even many UK listeners could probably barely understand them. But today's topic is bloody. It's a crazy conspiracy theory that the Queen herself, Queen Elizabeth II of England, is a cannibal. Where does such a conspiracy come from? Does the royal family sit down for Sunday supper at Windsor Castle and the butler comes by and places a large silver platter before her? Does he lift the cover to reveal a succulent, roasted leg of Larry? A grilled and seasoned juicy...
Oh, God, don't stop, Hart. Come on, man, keep describing food. I'm so close.
Oh, God, Andy! Stop it, I've had enough of your jerking off to food for one day. Oh, God. Before we get any deeper into this cannibal queen theory, we gotta look back into history. And Bunkfunkers, today's history lesson might shock you. And I hope you brought your appetites. So let me welcome back to the show, the History Hog.
Feels good to be back, Art. And the history of today's topic really is very morbid, but very fascinating.
I think so.
It all starts with a substance called bitumen. Bitumen was a bit of a wonder material in the ancient era. This stuff was a black, resin-like, sticky asphalt substance, which was naturally occurring. It has been seen in use all the way back to the 5th millennium BC. It's literally asphalt, and it's a sticky, black, viscous liquid or a semi-hard form of petroleum. You could use it for things like heating or insulation or waterproofing structures. It was a great building material. A beloved ancient race and ancient alien goat, greatest of all time, ancient race, the Sumerians, used that shit on everything, baby. Mortar for bricklaying? Hit with some bit. Sticking shit on statues? Hit with some bit. Caulking a ship? Hit it with some bit! The ancient Babylonians, too, heated this shit up and used it for mortar. It's great! This was the Frank's Red Hot and Flex Seal of the ancient world.
That's a great description of it, really.
Hey, but don't take my word for it. Here's what Pliny the Elder, an ancient Roman historian and creator of the first encyclopedia, had to say.
In his work, Natural History, Pliny described bitumen as a bit of a wonder drug, actually. It's not just good for building, it's also a panacea, if you will. It was said to stop bleeding, heal wounds, drive away snakes, treat leprosy, cataracts, epilepsy, gout, fever. I mean, geez, if you mixed it with soda, it could soothe a toothache. Bitumen mixed with wine could calm a cough and help with diarrhea. And a poultice of bitumen and barley flour could draw together severed muscles.
Whew.
I mean, god damn, you could use it to build. You can use it to cure diarrhea. I mean, I'm sold, Andy.
I need to get some of this stuff because I'm always shitting bricks when I'm laying bricks. You know what I mean, bro?
Too much so.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Yeah.
The ancient Egyptians even used bitumen as well. In fact, some ancient Greek philosophers considered the bitumen harvested from the Dead Sea to be of the highest quality bitumen in the entire world. But the ancient Egyptians used it mainly for their embalming process. You know, mummification. Because as we established, it's a pretty resin-like substance that seems to be great as a natural adhesive or insulant. Now, the thing is, the Persian word for bitumen is mamia, derived from the word mum, which means wax. An ancient physician named Razes was credited with referring to bitumen, the tar substance that occurs naturally in the ground, as mamia in the 11th century. Now, stay with us, Bunkfunkers, because this will all connect soon. Somewhere along the lines, the words began to confuse people. They started to associate the bitumen mamia with actual mummified bodies. You see, when a body is mummified, it too leaks a black tar-like substance. And you can kind of see where the confusion lies. When we talk about mamia, are we talking about the bitumen resinous kind or the mummified death tar kind? Razes never really clarified this point in his writings. And when his works were translated in the 12th century by Gerard of Cremona, Gerard of Cremona, an Italian translator of ancient texts, mamia was translated as, quote, the substance found in the lands where bodies are buried with aloes by which the liquid of the dead mixed with the aloes is transformed, and it is similar to marine pitch, end quote. Basically, what happened was they confused the bitumen wonder drug Mamiya for the dead body ooze coming out of mummies.
Now, you'd expect a mistake like this from fucking knuckle-dragging clods like Art and I.
Yeah,
right?
Easily.
But not smarty pants philosophers and historians of the ancient times. Well, Bunkfunkers, fool's on you. We're smarter than people were in the 12th century, baby.
Yeah.
All our haters can fucking shut up.
Yeah.
Woo! Woo! But it wasn't just Gerard of Cremona. Constantinus Africanus wrote similar things, and his views were used by Matthias Platerius of Salerno, who wrote that, quote, Mamiya is a spice found in the sepulchres of the dead. That is best which is black, ill-smelling, shiny, and massive, end quote. Which I'm pretty sure is also a porno description. Just saying.
I mean, you know, come on.
Black, ill-smelling, shiny, and massive. I watched that video. But these dum-dums were literally out here telling people that the black ooze that comes off of dead bodies was the same as the resinous ooze in the ground. It became widespread misinformation, like a bad game of telephone where you all end up deciding to eat a dead body at the end, and the beginning phrase was like, let's go ride our bikes to church on Sunday. All right.
You know.
Fine. We're ragging on these ancient people, but you got to think about it from their historical context. Very famous, well-respected, and smart writers such as Pliny, Strabo, and Diodorus all wrote about bitumen being used in the mummification process. They were all authoritative figures in their culture. If they said eating the black ooze from a dead mummy was a wonder drug, then it was. Also, have you ever seen a mummy, Bunkfunkers? We're not, they're not as cool as the Yummy Mummy cereal or the Brendan Fraser-led movie, The Mummy.
Yeah.
They're usually shriveled, dry, and very dark, the skin usually becomes as black as natural bitumen. So this further strengthened the idea that all ancient Egyptian mummies were embalmed with bitumen and oozed sweet, sweet panacea bitumen.
You know what the cruelest part is, Bunkfunkers? Most ancient Egyptian mummies didn't even use bitumen at all in their embalming process. Modern studies concluded that bitumen wasn't used in mummification heavily until the Roman eras. And even then, it was only typically used with poorer people because bitumen was readily available and cheap. Egyptian mummy skin turned black due to other resins and materials used in embalming. But still, this mix-up was ingrained in society. According to the Baghdad physician Abd al-Latif al-Baghdadi, or Baghdadi, from the 12th century, bitumen was, quote, in the belly and skull of these corpses, is also found in great abundance called mummy, end quote. But he added that although the word properly denoted bitumen or, you know, asphalt, quote, the mummy found in the hollows of the corpses in Egypt differs, but immaterially from the nature of mineral mummy. And where any difficulty arises in procuring the latter may be substituted in its stead, end quote. So basically what they're saying is, hey, you can't get your hands on that natural bitumen. The stuff that's coming out of dead bodies is exactly the same. Which is wrong.
Right.
So yeah, natural bitumen is where it's at, but this dead body goo is coo too.
That is.
But how did it get so ingrained? Well, aside from writers talking about Mamiya as a wonder drug and people misinterpreting the use cases for natural bitumen, the knowledge of Mamiya as a cure-all drug came to Europe as a result of the Crusades. The European soldiers on Crusade are over there in the Middle East hearing all about this amazing drug, Mamiya. I mean, so of course, Europe had to have it.
Ugh.
And they had to have all of it.
Classic Europe.
But the natural supply of bitumen was pretty limited from the 12th century onward. Thus, this is where people were like, all right, let me get some of that dead body goo. I mean, in their mind, it was the exact same thing as the natural stuff. I mean, Mamma Mia.
Yeah.
Mamma Mia.
Yeah. And so, people quite literally began digging up mummies to ingest them.
Yeah.
There are writings detailing walking the streets of Cairo, Egypt, and dead mummies lining the streets for the sole purpose of being sold as Mamiya. The demand for dead body goo grew and grew. Dr. Seuss. Dr. Seuss is... we worked with the estate of Dr. Seuss to write this script. the demand for dead body goo grew and grew, and the people who used it did too.
Yeah, there you go.
European businessmen from the 1400s were rolling into Cairo and buying bodies up by the cartful. They didn't even care about the black, bituminesque substance anymore. They started selling everything to do with mummies. They would boil the dead bodies and skim the oil that floated to the top and sell it off with outrageous margins.
Oh, the business.
I mean, this was a monster business. And did we say buying the dead bodies? We meant breaking into tombs and stealing them from their graves.
Yeah, they weren't buying shit.
Much better than buying.
Yeah.
Hell, sometimes they didn't even bother getting bona fide mummified bodies. The demand was so high that some apothecaries would just find random dead bodies, people who died out in the desert in a sandstorm, and grind those bad boys up and sell them off as real mumia. Mm-mm-mm. And this is where the whole, we only ingest mummies, dude, we're not friggin' flesh-eating corpses, chill out thing, takes a bit of a turn. Around the 1500s and 1600s, people really got into mumia. Like, high society had to have it. It was described as literally a fucking cheat code for life. It could cure anything. People started to get really desperate, too. They wanted these dead bodies. Here are some recipes and writings from the time. The German physician Oswald Kroll, who lived from 1563 to 1609, so a nice long life thanks to mummy, said mumia was, quote, not the liquid matter which is found in the Egyptian sepulchres, end quote, but rather, quote, the flesh of a man that perishes a violent death and kept for some time in the air, end quote. And then Kroll gave a detailed recipe for making tincture of mumia from the corpse of a young red-haired man who had been hanged, bludgeoned on the breaking wheel, exposed to the air for days, then cut into small pieces, sprinkled with powdered myrrh and aloes, soaked in wine, and dried.
Mmm, delicious.
I mean, it's a lot of work, but I think you find it's pretty worth it for the end product.
Of literally eating a dead body.
Yeah, it's like making pastrami. I mean, it's a lot of, it takes some time and some effort, but it's worth it in the end.
Yeah. One recipe promoted by German physician Johann Schroeder, Schroeder? Yeah, that's Schroeder. Johann Schroeder. Right?
Yeah.
Okay. In his 17th century medical tome, Pharmacopoeia Medico Chymia? Chymica. Whatever. Is blatant about the use cases of certain bodies over others in mummy making. Quote, take the fresh, unspotted cadaver of a red-headed man, because in them the blood is thinner, and the flesh hence more excellent. Aged about 24, who has been executed and died a violent death. Let the corpse lie one day and night in the sun and moon, but the weather must be good. Cut the flesh in pieces and sprinkle it with myrrh and just a little aloe. Then soak it in spirits of wine for several days. Hang it up for 6 or 10 hours. Soak it again in the spirits of wine. And then let the pieces dry in dry air in a shady spot. Thus, they will be similar to smoked meat and it will not stink. End quote. I mean, I guess South Park was only half right.
Yeah.
Gingers don't have souls, but goddamn, do they have medicinal properties.
Ooh, yeah.
I mean, what this goes to show is just people were going crazy for mumia, and they were heightening it. They weren't just saying, okay, give me these Egyptian dead bodies. Now they're starting to say, give us dead bodies.
Anybody.
Anybody. False mumia started to make its way into the market as well. People were selling anybody and everybody. People who died of diseases like leprosy. I mean, they were selling off slave bodies, criminals sentenced to death, half-ratting corpses, all sold as mumia to meet this demand. But then the Enlightenment happened, and all these hoity-toity know-it-all philosophers realized that eating people might not just be morally wrong, but unhealthy as well.
Ugh, God, fucking philosopher eggheads, shut up. Let me eat a dead body. God damn.
I know. I'm just trying to have some damn fun.
Jesus.
Snort a little corpse and go party with my Victorian friends.
People just want to have a good time, and you get these fucking eggheads over here just trying to shit all over everything. God. Fuck, it pisses me off.
Renaissance scholars and physicians started to be like, hey man, maybe eating dead bodies is wrong and stuff around the 16th century. French naturalist Pierre Bellon was one of the earliest to conclude that the word mumia was actually incorrectly translated and confused with the bitumen mumia. English herbalist John Gerard had a 1597 text called Herbal and actually described how the ancient Egyptians didn't even use bitumen in their embalming process. They used cedar pitch. He also explained that what they falsely called mumia should be pis asphaltum, a.k.a. bitumen. and not dead bodies. We shouldn't be eating dead bodies. We should be eating asphalt.
Yeah. Go outside and eat a piece of the road. That's your cure-all.
Barber surgeon Ambroise Paré even called out and revealed the manufacturer of fake mamia in France, straight up telling everyone how apothecaries would just steal bodies of dead criminals, dry them in an oven, and then sell their flesh as mamia. This badass barber surgeon even called out the Christians who, quote, so dainty mouth could eat the bodies of the dead, end quote.
Ooh, goddamn.
Goddamn.
Leave it to a barber surgeon to hack and slash a sick burn like that. Fucking that's barber fucking surgeons. Cool. I mean, is there a cooler fucking person than a barber surgeon?
Go in.
Cut your hair. And
trim up the fade and also cut off a little bit of my gallbladder.
Yeah.
I love it.
Just a little bit. Give me a trim on the old gallbladder.
Yeah, give me like a 2.5 on the gallbladder and then, I don't know, inch and a half off my spleen.
Might have to use the scissors on the spleen. I don't know. Paré actually administered mamia a bunch, but eventually came to despise the drug and stop prescribing after he claimed, quote, this wicked kind of drug doth nothing help the diseased.
This wicked kind of drug doth nothing help the diseased.
Yeah, it's old English, so...
Juan the April.
Juan in the switch April. Little Chaucer.
Little
for
Chaucer.
All you literary bunk funkers.
Little Chaser of Chaucer.
We've gone a wandering on pilgrimage. As cool as a barber surgeon is, they couldn't ruin the entire dead body feast. Mamia was just too damn ingrained in society by the 16th century. Hell, even old Billy Shakespeare wrote about it. You guys remember him? Bill Shakespeare did a show on him.
That's right.
Physicist Robert Boyle praised it as, quote, one of the useful medicines commended and given by our physicians for falls and bruises and in other cases too, end quote. Dutch physician Stephen Blankert's 1754 Lexicon Medicum Renovatum even listed four types of mumia. God damn, was mumia the original LaCroix? I'll have one pamplemousse, one cranberry lime, and one dried corpse embalmed with asphalt.
Wow. Each one more disgusting than the next.
I would
fuck
have gone,
sparkling water.
I would have gone in reverse order.
Yeah.
I'll go in order of most appealing. One dried corpse embalmed with asphalt, cranberry lime, and one pamplemousse.
I mean... Bunk Funkers, we've kind of already described it, but it wasn't long after the popularity of mamia gave way to corpse medicine, full-blown corpse medicine. Mamia was just the catalyst for a morbid and often overlooked portion of history, the history of corpse medicine. Like we say, it's exactly how it sounds, Bunk Funkers. Corpse medicine was the early medicinal and cosmetic practice of consuming or using parts of dead bodies. And boy, was it popular. Everyone, royalty, priests, scientists, from high to low society, routinely ingested remedies containing human bones, organs, flesh, blood, and fat as medicine. Very few people at all opposed the practice, which is ironic considering how much of high society in Europe looked down upon cannibalism as a sign of savagery. Which I think, actually, if I'm not wrong, Andy, was also a line from that Alanis Morissette song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's like eating a corpse! When you call cannibalism a savage trait, it's like snorting human bones in an attempt to turn fate. Who would have thought it figures?
Well, I mean, I don't know if those were the lyrics, Art, but obviously did the research, so you ought to know.
Well, I know Alanis Morissette personally. We're good friends, so... Anyway,
And let me tell you, this corpse medicine, these were some jagged little pills to swallow. Let me tell you what.
Yeah, literally like little teeth and bones and shit.
Yeah, bone fragments in them.
So let's dive into corpse medicine. We're going to give you all some of the most famous remedies and recipes because honestly, mamia is to corpse medicine as getting a little contact high at an outdoor concert is to using a dirty needle to get high off bathtub heroin.
We've all been there.
You've been on the, as you saw that on the SAT.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that was one of my favorite analogies in the SAT. Yeah. So, Bunk Funkers, here's some fun remedies and recipes of corpse medicines. Are you suffering from excessive bleeding? Rub some moss that was found growing all over a human skull on it. Bam! Corpse medicine. Actually, skulls are a big one in corpse medicine. Crushed up skulls were believed to cure epilepsy, bouts of bleeding, and even stop death. You could combine fingernails, skull, mistletoe, and peony root to also stop epilepsy as well. Thomas Willis, a 17th century pioneer of brain science, believed that a drink of hot chocolate and powdered human skull could help with apoplexy or bleeding. In the UK, the Irish were a common source of skulls to be used for powders and salves. And that fact definitely won't ruffle any feathers.
Nope.
Yeah.
That'd
I mean,
be hard Irish to believe, were preyed upon for their skulls?
Yeah, hard to believe that people in the UK would literally steal the skulls of dead Irish and use them as medicine. Well, I guess the good news is that they had plenty of Irish skulls to make use of because they couldn't stop killing the Irish. Getting old? Developing cataracts? Why not take some literal dried human shit, grind it into a powder, and blow it into your eyes? Bam! Corpse medicine. Do you all remember that episode of Emerald Live?
Yeah. He blew dried human shit into the audience.
He took a shit into a dehydrator, dehydrated the shit, and then blew it into the eyes of everybody at those little tables. But hey, these are pretty simple recipes. Why not get fancy? Infuse water with lily, lavender, Malmsey, and 3 pounds of human brain for a whole host of cures. Bam! Corpse medicine.
Now, apart from human skulls, people were also pretty obsessed with human fat. As an ointment of human fat and cinnabar was said to cure people of rabies. 18th century French pharmacist Comte Antoine François de Fouquet detailed a whole process for cutting human fat into pieces, separating the membranes and vessels, washing it, allowing it to melt into an oil and then re-solidify in a glazed earthen vessel. And I mean, you could use that human fat recipe for a whole bunch of cures. Epilepsy comes up a lot. Like epilepsy must, it's very interesting that epilepsy must have been like a massive problem.
Yeah. It seriously seems like, or people just felt like dead bodies were the best cure for epilepsy. Yeah,
they didn't know what else to do.
Dead bodies seem to be the number one cure promoted by these old timey doctors for epilepsy.
German doctors argued that fat from the deceased could be used to help with gout by rubbing bandages of the fat and wrapping them around the affected areas, for example. Human fat applied directly to the forehead. You would have gout in your forehead.
Oh, man, I love those commercials.
Yeah, at 4 a.m.
Human fat applied directly to the forehead. Human fat applied directly to the forehead.
A belief that a magical candle made from human fat called a thieves' candle could stupefy and paralyze a person lasted well into the 1880s. Here's a fun one. Coffin water. Literally water used to wash a dead body and place into a coffin could be used to clear up warts or the fits.
Oh, yeah.
And hey, you know Andy and I love a good dried fruit. Mm-mm-mm. How about some dried human organs?
Oh, yeah.
A dried heart could cure epilepsy.
There it is, epilepsy again.
Yeah, skulls didn't do the trick. Try a dried human heart.
You know, just keep eating parts of the body until you don't have epilepsy anymore. Yeah.
The skin from a mummy could help stop bleeding and restore the flesh. Dried gallbladder, powdered and mixed with wine, could help with deafness.
Now, here's a recipe that I'm really interested in and have been DMing America's Test Kitchen repeatedly on social media for them to cover this.
Yeah.
A recipe for curing hemorrhoids by touching the sore areas with a severed human hand. I got to get my living hands on that dead hand recipe.
No response from them, huh? They blocked you, too.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I started reaching out to Bridget and Julia and Jack Bishop on their own personal social media, and they blocked me as well. So we'll see what happens.
Yeah. I'm going to have to really want that recipe.
I'm going to have to start, you know, pestering Morgan Bowling and Brian Roof on their social media now. But what about brain food, huh?
Gotta have brain food.
Well, John French, an English physician and alchemist, had a recipe called the brain tincture he published in 1651. Step one, take the brains of a young man that died a violent death along with membranes, arteries, veins, nerves, and the pith of the back. Two, mash it up in a mortar and pestle. Three, cover the brain paste in spirits or wine. Does that mean alcohol or ghosts? Number four, leave it to ferment in horse shit. I really think go ferment in horse shit should come back as a well-known insult.
I think it should. Go ferment in horse shit.
Ah, go ferment yourself in horse shit.
Yeah, that's a good one. Now, a lot of what we wrote, or read to you, I guess, is might seem weird and macabre, and maybe even a little tame in some senses, right? But this shit was real to these people, and they believed it was their only hope out of their miserable, shitty, disease-ridden lives. I mean, there are accounts from public executions of the 16th century where onlookers would run up on stage right after the deceased's head was chopped off, and they would fucking drink the warm blood straight from the veins in his neck.
Whew.
That's metal.
Yeah.
Now,
corpse medicine.
Corpse medicine.
Presented by Indian Art.
Presented by Indian Art. The poor, you know, who couldn't always afford these crazy processed compounds sold in apothecary shops, could gain the benefits of cannibal medicine by standing by executions. And then with literally paying for a small amount for a cup of the still warm blood of the condemned. Blood was a big deal, too. Not just skulls, fat, and some of the organs, but blood was big. In fact, the 16th century German-Swiss physician Paracelsus believed blood was good for drinking. And one of his followers even suggested taking blood from a living body. Now, okay. Blood from a living body? Maybe that was a little too much. No. I'll ingest a corpse's blood, but I'm not going to ingest it from a living person.
No.
No.
I don't want to take blood from somebody who consents to allowing me to take their blood. No.
No.
I would much rather wait until that person is dead and has no agency and then steal their blood.
That's right. Now, according to Richard Sugg, author of Mummies, Cannibals, and Vampires, The History of Corpse Medicine from the Renaissance to the Victorians, really is the text to get if you're interested in corpse medicine.
Yeah, the authoritative book.
Yes. Quote, the executioner was considered a big healer in Germanic countries. He was a social leper with almost magical powers, end quote. You know, the executioner was the one who would be like divvying out the blood and giving it out to the poor, and it's wild.
Yeah.
But what if you aren't into the whole raw diet, you know? Well, no worries. There's a lovely 1679 recipe from a Franciscan apothecary which describes turning human blood into a delicious marmalade.
Mm, so good on toast. Now, Bunkfuckers, these recipes are fun and all, but why did people during this time period suddenly start ingesting corpse medicine? A bulk of this belief comes from the homeopathic idea that like cures like. You might remember us talking about homeopaths on our medical goop cancer cure episode.
Right.
So talking about Paracelsus again, a 16th century Swiss physician and sometimes referred to as the father of toxicology, believed that to cure an ailment, you needed to treat it with something similar. And many of the corpse medicine using doctors followed this lead. Got a headache? Well, cure it with something similar. How about human skull fragments? Got a toothache? Use a corpse's tooth to heal it, et cetera, and so forth there. You get the idea. Another reason humans were jonesing to take a chomp out of some dead bodies was because human remains were thought to contain the spirit of the body from which they were taken. The spirit was a very real part of human physiology, and it linked body and soul. Blood was especially powerful in this belief because human blood was thought to carry the soul and did so in the form of vaporous spirits. The fresher the blood, the better. Sometimes the blood of young men was preferred, sometimes that of virginal young women. By ingesting corpse materials, one gains the strength of the person consumed.
You know, here's the thing, Bunk Funkers. Drinking human blood ain't nothing new. Ancient Romans would drink the blood of slain gladiators because they believed it imbued them with the gladiator's spirit and strength. Even Leonardo da Vinci said, quote, we preserve our life with the death of others. In a dead thing, insensate life remains, which, when it is reunited with the stomachs of the living, regains sensitive and intellectual life, end quote. But that was ancient Rome. This is the 16th and 17th century. Shouldn't they know better by now? Furthermore, the high society of the time were total hypocrites. Oh my God, such snobs about it. Here they were ingesting blood and bone fragments, and then they would look at cannibalistic practices in the New World and scoff.
Well, I say, at least we're not like those savages. Now, Jeeves, please, another helping of dead man's dick and balls for the table.
Hey, if I didn't know any better, that sounded like Jacob Rees-Mogg.
Oh, wow. Then what a good guest for this show.
Maybe our twin cousins from the UK brought that over.
They were traveling with him.
Hello, ancestral home.
Now, the difference between European corpse medicine and New World cannibalism is actually kind of an interesting juxtaposition. Most of the Western cannibal practice is deeply social, with the relationship between the eaten and the eater being highly significant. When your relatives died or your kin died, you would eat them to consume their spirit, and it was very ceremonial. But with Europeans, none of that shit mattered. Human body parts are just body parts, baby. They're just matter, like any other herb or oil or whatever commodity. And this relationship with the eaten issue is likely what gave into the hypocrisy behind corpse medicine. They thought that's fucked up. Eat somebody you know? That's gross. I'll go eat some other dude's body parts. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know, the Protestant Christians were famous for their anti-cannibalism stance, famously saying that the Catholic idea of the Eucharist, which is, you know, for the uninitiated, the idea that the bread, wine ingested during Holy Communion is believed to actually be the body and blood of Christ, literally. That was totally fucked up, you know, and they hated it. And it was fiercely debated. But, I mean, when it comes to getting some medical treatment, I mean, suddenly, well, that's a gray area. This is very silent, you know, silent. In fact, Edward Taylor, a Puritan physician who practiced corpse medicine in New England for over 40 years, was one of many religious physicians who promoted the use of dead bodies as cure.
I know I said you can't have some, but could I please have some dead bodies, please? Daddies?
The Puritans, they put their two widow Puritan fingers together and said, for me.
And to tie all this back into old Queenie E, number two, the deuce. Here are some famous royals who practiced corpse medicine. King Charles II of England sipped the King's Drops, his personal tincture containing human skull and alcohol. In fact, on his deathbed, Charles II's doctors frantically used these drops along with a barrage of herbal enemas. I mean, the only thing I want to be barraged by.
Yeah.
And all kinds of other treatments to no avail. Queen Mary II was also a fan of the King's Drops. Queen Elizabeth I was known for rubbing human fat on her skin to treat her smallpox scars. So, some royals throughout history enjoyed corpse medicine. Obviously, many of the nobility and common folk did too. But this all died out, pun for sure intended, around the 1800s.
However, you could still buy Mamiya, real deal Mamiya, in a German apothecary shop up until the 1920s.
Boy, could you, Art. I was just a youngster then. Times were tough. We watched the French and Belgian troops march through the Ruhr. We saw rebellions outside our school windows. We saw our fathers find no work in the fatherland. But as soon as that cuckoo clock struck 3 p.m., us kiddies would let out a squeal and race down to the local apothecary, Willy Wonka's corpse factory, and spend any marks we could scrounge up on delicious Mamiya. Oh, I fill my little tummy with the Mamiya. Willy Wonka, my favorite apothecary. Oh, fill me up with your Mamiya. Oh, I smell it cooking in the back. Oh, skim off the top of that body boiling in the copper cauldron. Oh, I love the fresh Mamiya.
You know what? I don't get your timeline. You're an ageless wonder, Andy, but you eating dead bodies as a child makes a lot of sense, actually.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah.
Oh, I feel like Wolfgang Puck anytime I talk about the Mamiya from Willy Wonka's. Oh, Willy, they could never.
Willy Wonka's corpse factory.
Willy Wonka's corpse factory.
Willy Wonka's.
They could never recreate it here in the United States. Oh, it's so yummy. Mm-hmm. Delicious Mamiya. Mama Mamiya.
But would it make sense for the queen to eat dead bodies just like you did, Andy? You know.
We were alive at the same time.
That's true.
Her family is German. They've probably been to Willy Wonka's corpse factory.
In this day and age, Andy, though.
Oh, sure.
Just who would go and disparage the royal family like this and make such a claim? Who would do such a thing, Andy?
Who could do this?
Well, enter one Hubert Humdinger, which is pronounced Humdinger, even though it's spelled Humdinger.
A quirky name for a quirky fellow who led a not-so-quirky life. Humdinger was allegedly a philosopher who wrote 367 books on cultural phenomena, that one every day of the year, and then a little more, on cultural phenomenon and disinformation in psychology, science, politics, sociology, all the big ologies. Whoa, 367 books?
Yeah.
I bet this guy has a whole stack dedicated to him at your local library.
You would think.
I mean, he's got to have an entire wing. But they don't. You can't find a single Humdinger relic because in 1971, they destroyed all his works. Mm-mm. The State Department said the First Amendment did not apply to ideas as frighteningly clear and creative as Humdinger's. Freedom of speech did not protect connecting so many universal truths in such precise ways, just as certain simple chemicals shouldn't be stored right beside each other for risk of combustion. But don't take our word for it. Here's what an unnamed government spokesman said in a 1971 press conference. Quote, "The alignment of unorthodox ideas into grand unity provide, we believe, an unhealthy access to mental and spiritual power that resides in each human, but isn't meant to be awakened all at once. Words can and do light fires in the minds of men, and it seems Humdinger strives to not only start the fires, but pour gasoline onto them and blow them into whirlwinds of uncontrollable fire." End quote. Someone call Ray Bradbury because he's going to be pissed. And then someone call Billy Joel because we found out who started the fire.
Yeah, we fucking know. It's Herbert Humdinger. Or Hubert.
Hubert.
Hubert Humdinger.
Hubert.
Yeah.
It's Hubert?
Is it Hubert?
I don't know.
It's Hubert or Humdert.
Hubert or Hubert Humdinger.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to call him Hubert.
Yeah, Hubert. But who was that unnamed government spokesperson, Andy? Well, we don't know. That's why they're unnamed. You idiots. So certainly after this Fahrenheit 451 event, Humdinger fled to an undisclosed location in Northern Europe where he persists to live. However, he does occasionally sneak back into the USA. And this is where he met the author, Adam Lubke, of Dear Dirty America, which is like a political and cultural blog website.
Mm-hmm.
And he met him outside of a 7-Eleven in Wyoming in 1989. Sweet. Naturally.
Yeah. Where everybody meets.
There, he told Lubke some outrageous stuff over the years, including that the Queen of England was, quote, violently vibrant and, quote, packed with more energy than the sun, end quote, and that, quote, she must eat human flesh, end quote, to remain so energetic in her old age. Humdinger wrote this entire theory out in We Royalty magazine. But what's the story, Andy and Art? Where's the beef on this whole enchilada? Why did you tell me all this history?
Well, here it is, you hungry bunk funkers. Put your napkins around your collars and get ready to dig in. A serviceman was called to Windsor Castle to investigate possible quote-unquote electrical problems in the castle's east side kitchen area. The serviceman was accompanied by three pre-cleared English constables, and he poked around the kitchen and eventually found a nest of faulty wiring behind the old refrigerator. The serviceman needed to call the rest of his team to handle this job, but he needed to get them cleared for entrance first. Before he left, he made one last check in the Queen's private freezer to see if it was chilled enough and how and if it was getting enough electricity to turn on when the fridge was on the fritz. What he saw froze him in his place. Strips of flayed meat stretched out like bacon and carefully packaged in a see-through wrap. Frozen forearms, a hunk of a human leg, a piece of a male chest, and, quote, a few other parts they'd rather not describe, end quote. Which is clearly a dick and or balls.
You can't fool us. We spotted dick. Spotted dick.
Spotted dick. Love it.
We spotted it.
Well, the serviceman was shocked and went to grab the constables who were all chilling in the living room and scratching each other's backs.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, the living room is adorned by reptile heads and a portrait of Richard III fighting a dog. And so the constables helped pick through the parts, quote, like taking a peek at her damned undies, one of them said. Woof, all that meat is going to melt from how steamy this is getting.
Oh, baby.
Oh, man.
Oh, baby.
Granny panties.
Granny panties. Normally, the constables would take DNA samples, check a missing persons list, detain a suspect with clear evidence in her freezer. But constables were hesitant. This was the Queen, after all. I mean, she's got special privileges.
Yeah, she could.
The Queen probably acquired these parts through legal Queen channels.
Yeah.
And Humdinger's story ends there. But the dissection of the Queen of England as a cannibal doesn't. According to an English carpenter named John Bellows from a, quote, lost interview in 2001, the Queen is, quote, really bloody crazy, end quote. Bellows was doing some work on Windsor Castle in the early 90s and describes hearing, quote, manic shouts and jolly loud animal screams, end quote. God, what the fuck is the Queen doing?
I don't know. It sounds like my house.
Yeah.
But that's just pee on Musk.
Yeah, that's true. Bellows also described the Queen's apparently sharpened, jagged teeth. He ruminated over what exactly she used those pointy choppers for and compared her to Queequeg, the cannibal harpoonist from the Moby Dick. Bellows said all this well before the Humdinger expose on the Queen's human flesh locker, which, boy, I love getting my kicks at flesh locker.
Yeah.
Or you could just go to Foot Locker and get a couple of feet.
But yeah. No, I want clothes for the whole body, right. So I go to Flesh Locker.
But he never got to read it because Bellows mysteriously disappeared in a supposed boating accident. His body was never found.
Humdinger always knew this to be true. He explained the Queen's habit of eating people. Quote, "It's not about nutrition or vitamins and minerals. Eating humans is about power and glory. It's a spiritual boon, but it's twisted and should be forbidden." End quote. Humdinger concludes on an interesting question. Should the ingestion of human remains be forbidden? Human organs and blood can be transplanted from one person to another and is a medically viable process today. And no one, well, maybe except Jehovah's Witnesses, have an issue with it. Grafts of skin and tissue can be taken from corpses and used to generate new tissue in living humans as well. That's all well and dandy, but there still exists a very real and very sinister black market for the trading of human organs and body parts. Perhaps the morality of cannibalism is more nuanced than we think. Or maybe I'm just really friggin' hungry right now.
Well, I got a question, and many skeptics do as well. Who the fuck is this Humdinger guy anyway? I mean...
Yeah, it's a good question.
He doesn't exist.
Oh.
If you Google him... The only things that come up are other conspiracy websites that all talk about his conspiracy or talk about him. And it seems to all originate from the website / blog Dear Dirty America, which is a quasi-satirical blog. Apparently, they published a book, Dear Dirty America did, all about Humdinger, titled Hubert Humdinger, Exiled and Loving It, Collected Insights from a Nearly Forgotten Cultural Philosopher. And we hear it's a real humdinger. Okay, we're having fun.
Is that art over there? Or is that Henny Youngman?
So is the Queen still reliving the corpse medicine of the past? Does she dine on delicious roasted human flesh? And is Hubert Humdinger real? Well, although this topic may have tempted you to go out and find some real-life mumia or take a bite out of a hunk of human flesh, we urge all you bunkfunkers to quell the hunger deep inside your mind tummies and know that the real medicine is only found by ingesting the whole enchilada. Mr. Bunker's Conspiracy Time podcast will be right back after this brief message.
Ooh, it sure is chilly outside, Art.
Andy, where's your jacket?
Art, did you hear me? The wind chill is 30 below.
Andy, I think you have hypothermia.
You know, Art, with the horrific chilly weather outside, the only thing that'll warm me up is listening to Andy and Art Debunked, available only on patreon.com/MrBunkerPod.
Are you seriously shilling our Patreon right now?
Oh, Art, laughing at the antics of Andy and Art is all the warmth I need. And for just $5 a month, I get access to all the episodes of the show, behind-the-scenes updates, sneak peeks at episodes, and I can chat with Andy and Art on the Bunker Discord.
Andy, we need to get you to a hospital.
We need to get me to patreon.com/MrBunkerPod. So chilly. Oh, God. I'm chilled to the bone.
Hey, welcome back, Bunk Funkers. That was our research of Is the Queen a Cannibal and Corpse Medicine.
Wow, what a topic, huh?
What a topic. Andy, you ever heard about this throughout history? You're a history buff.
Yeah, I do like history. I am very buff. I honestly have, I guess not in this to this level of detail. Like, I didn't realize how widespread corpse medicine is. I guess I always kind of considered it to be sort of a, I guess, niche part of medicinal history, but obviously the research for this episode shows it was kind of widespread.
A little bit. I mean, I feel like we should have been alive in the 1600s because, goddamn, would it have been easy to be considered, like, a really good physician?
Yeah, yeah. Just eat another person.
You just make shit up.
It's like, what's wrong with you? My arm hurts. Oh, I know. I got an arm in the back. You can eat it. Then you'll be fine.
Like, people are like, dude, this guy's a friggin' genius. My arm hurts, so he gave me an arm.
It doesn't feel any better, but it was an arm. He did do it.
The thing that I love is that half this shit is soaked, dripping, soaked in alcohol.
Yeah.
To the point where it's like, you're just getting drunk.
The people are, that was one point that was made about the King's Drops is that, yeah, it probably did work because it probably helped relieve pain because you get drunk from drinking the alcohol. Has nothing to do with the skull. Or people who have minor ailments that are probably going to recover anyway.
Yeah.
They probably experience a placebo. Even maybe people with more severe stuff, they might feel a little bit better because they're experiencing placebo. I think history's shown us anything. Even modern medical technology shows us that placebo can be a very powerful effect.
A lot of these remedies just feel like jokes a sarcastic doctor is making. Like, he's like, somebody comes in, they're like, oh, doc, my eyes don't see so good no more. And he's like, go blow shit in them, dirtbag.
Geez, doc, okay.
All right,
you guys will call me a dirtbag, but thanks.
Yeah, I guess so. Go blow shit in your eyes, dirtbag.
Hey, why didn't you dry out a turd and blow that in your eyes, you fucking dummy? Okay.
Jeez, guess I never thought about it that way.
Stop coming to this doctor.
Guess I never thought about it that way then, doc. All right. All right. Thanks for the advice there, doc. I will go blow shit in my eyes now.
You know, this is such a metal fucking topic. Think about this. You're some king, Andy, from the 13th century.
Oh, I frequently daydream about being a 13th century king.
You're a 13th century king. You're on your deathbed. You're in excruciating pain because there's no morphine. There's none of that shit. You've lived a haggard, depressing, violent, and painful life, Andy. You're 30 years old.
Yeah, I'm the exact same age I am now.
Very similar to your life now.
Without modern technology, I would be on my deathbed now.
And now, in a last-ditch effort to save your life, they fucking shove alcohol chased with human blood up your ass.
I mean, I would just have to raise the question at that point is, why weren't we doing this sooner? Why were we waiting until I'm on my deathbed to shove liquor up my ass?
On the other end of the spectrum is me. I'm a peasant riddled with diseases, and my life is a cacophony of brutality.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, that's my metal band.
Cacophony of brutality?
That's trademarked by me. And your only hope, the only thing that can save me, is to watch another human be executed brutally. Like, in a way that I don't think we can fathom. And then I rush up and I drink blood from his fucking severed neck.
Yeah. Yeah, this is feudalism for you. Surfing is the only only way for you now, surf.
I mean, it really kind of brings into the perspective the brutality of this time period. Like, not only is everybody disease ridden, but also it's like, my only hope in life is that either the king will touch me, because the king is seen as a adversary of God, literally.
Yeah.
I think the queen is supposed to be the bride of God as well. And so the king is a god, a literal god whose touch can cure you. But then, like, there's just this, like, general idea where if I drink a violently executed man's blood, I'll be okay. That's just fucked up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of wild to think about an executioner being somehow elevated in society because they can dispense, basically being a pharmacist, essentially. This is like your 16th century pharmacist is the local executioner who is like, you know,
hey. All right, well, you got any questions about this still warm blood? Just give us a call. Check one in the morning.
Drink a cup right now, and then I guess whatever.
Yeah, you know, drink one right now. Still warm. Straight from his severed fucking neck. And then have one in the evening. Now, do you take it with food? You will get it on septummy. Or, carry on.
This giant fucking axe.
Move along then.
Nothing to see here.
Nothing to see.
It's very interesting to me. Although, I have to be honest. Some of these things are almost not so far away that it seems so foreign. I have a friend who is from Poland.
Okay.
And told me about
an execution that she attended.
that in Poland there is still some people who believe in the like health benefits of gopher fat.
Hmm.
So it's like it's that same thing where you might make a candle out of gopher fat.
Folk medicine.
But it's, you know, obviously with modern laws and stuff, it's kind of like a black market item. Like you're not supposed to like sell.
Move over, Yankee candle.
Yeah, gopher fat as a medical remedy. But it's like one of those things you can make it into a candle, or you can make it into like a cream and like rub it on parts that are, you know, like if you have a rash or something, or if you're trying to masturbate.
You're a teenager trying to masturbate, you gotta lube up a little gopher fat.
Yeah, you don't wanna get chafed.
Well, it's an interesting discussion about modern medical practices and this sort of corpse medicine. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I guess here's the thing. This is a stupid argument to have because in the modern day we have consent. You consent to give your organs away. You consent to be used for whatever.
You donate your blood. They don't take your blood from you after you're executed.
Right.
There's no more incentive for governments to continue executing people for their body parts.
Right.
You know, like you have to agree to be an organ donor.
But people might look at this corpse medicine and be like, oh God, that's so fucking gross. But it's like, they weren't that far off. It wasn't a sterile environment and they weren't doing it the right way.
Yeah.
Cause putting new blood into you is actually very
human blood is one of the biggest.
Yeah.
Being able to actually use human blood in medicine is one of the biggest.
It's a lifesaver, advances. Literally.
Yeah. Blood, I mean, there's blood transfusions. People can replenish blood if they're having long surgeries.
Literally will renew you. You will feel energetic and new and good when you get a blood transfusion.
Yeah, yeah.
Like you feel full of energy. It's incredible.
Yeah, my grandfather had lymphoma. That's cancer of the blood. Lots of blood transfusions toward the end of his life. That was like the only way to get a jolt of energy in some ways was to have a blood transfusion.
Yeah.
So, I mean, using human blood, you're right. It's not far off, but yeah, the big difference is that the blood that they use in a blood transfusion is given by willing donors.
Right.
Not taken directly from somebody whose head was chopped off.
Digging up corpses, though, and desecrating graves of people who have been slain and fallen.
Well, plus that's the thing. If you want blood, you have to get a fresh body.
Yeah.
Because the blood's not going to stay there forever. So if you're digging up an ancient corpse, you're doing much different things with that than you are with fresh blood.
It's interesting. I had a gum graft a couple years ago, and that's where one of my gums had receded to the point where the tooth root is showing.
Yeah.
And so they need to lengthen the gum, and the only way you can really do that is there's three ways. You can take a graft of the roof of your mouth, which apparently is the same tissue as your gums, your front gum tissue. You can take a graft of gum from an animal, or you can get gum tissue from a corpse and put that in your fucking mouth. And it's kind of like, obviously, with the last two, there's always it might not take. You have a much better chance of success with number one, but obviously there's going to be more healing time involved because now I have a hole in the roof of my mouth and surgically lined gum tissue.
Which did you pick?
Well, number one, obviously.
Okay.
Because the rate of success is like 99%. It's like 99% that your own tissue is going to take to your own tissue. It's just the healing time sucks. And I think the last one is the animal. And I think the corpse tissue is actually the second easiest.
Do you believe this, Bunk Funkers? We got fucking Artie Kardashian over here getting gum extensions. What the fuck is this? So fucking vain. You know,
I need to have good looking gums, baby.
Thinks he's all that.
Yeah.
And friggin'.
People are always complimenting me on my gums. They're saying, God damn, you got some pink ass gums, boy.
Some long pink gums.
Ooh, wait, look like
Yeah, what you got, Hubba Bubba up in there in them teeth? I say, yeah. I got Hubba Bubba grafting on my teeth. Everything's sweet to me.
Those gums are so extra, it looks like bubble gum.
You know what's funny, though, is it's because I had braces as a kid.
The braces made your gums recede?
Yeah, because it's not natural that my teeth were literally moved into place aesthetically by metal wires, that the roots of my teeth were moved so far forward that the gums receded. Mm. So it's because of braces.
That's
great. You know, I think it's great that my parents spent so much money on stupid fucking braces just for me to have to spend money in my adult life on gum grafts.
Yeah, that is fun.
Which is wonderful. I love it.
Yeah.
No, obviously having straight teeth is a much better life than having the jagged craziness that could come with. My teeth were fucked up.
We wouldn't want to see Art in the Big Book of British Smiles.
Speaking of Big Book of British Smiles, where's these jagged pointy chompers on the Queen?
Oh man, I've never seen these photos of the Queen with her jagged pointy teeth.
Oh my God.
What
do we think about this, Andy? You think the Queen is eating people?
Who was the carpenter? The carpenter's name? I can't remember the carpenter.
John Bellows.
John Bellows made the Queen sound like a character from The Shining. Riding around Windsor Castle on an electric scooter at speeds so fast that she couldn't move her face. That her hair is straight back like Christopher Lloyd. She can't move the muscles on her face. She's going so fast inside Windsor Castle on her
asking everybody, you want to play a game? Would you like to play a game?
That's odd. Usually the blood gets off on the third floor. All work and no play makes John Bellows a boring boy. Red rum, red rum, red rum.
Like, what the fuck?
His mummy!
It's like a, instead of an axe, it's like a croquet mallet or some shit.
Time for tea, John Bellows!
Animal noises and loud screams. Apparently this was during the early 90s, 1992 to be exact. A year the Queen called Annus Horribilis.
Yeah, the horrible year, that's it.
The year that her sons all divorced their wives or something.
Yeah, Andrew and Fergie got divorced. Charles and Diana got divorced.
Fergie from the Black Eyed Peas?
That's right, they were married before he became a child molester. Oh no, it was probably during while he was a child molester. But both of the royal sons were divorced that year. And so the royal family was obviously under a lot of scrutiny because Diana was very popular.
Oh, she was so popular. We discussed her in an episode as well, Bungfunkers.
Yeah, you can check that and hear more about the horrible year. Fergie, I think, was fairly popular too. Sarah Ferguson.
I don't know. I have no attachment or recognition or appreciation or care about the royal family.
Yeah, I don't
any
give a shit.
Way, shape, or form. I'm not from the UK.
Yeah.
It's not part of my life, my society, my community. They don't affect me in any way.
I don't get it.
So if Bungfunkers from the UK are offended by this episode, I guess we're sorry. But, you know, then again, I wouldn't really give a fuck if you were making fun of celebrities from America as well.
Yeah, you can make fun of our, fuck? Make fun of our presidents. We don't care.
Yeah.
Make fun of all our politicians.
Yeah, or I don't know. We don't have anything.
Make fun of me and Art. We don't care.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, like, you can a little bit, but, like, you know, also.
I mean, you can't have that much bad to say before you get to the point where you're just lying and making things up.
True. It's like, I wouldn't even know where to begin. I mean, maybe it's like, occasionally you guys are too. Like, you guys are too funny and too cool that, like, you make other people feel bad about themselves, which is right. Like, okay, I guess I could
do
take
too
that.
Good a job, I guess. It would be, like, another thing levied at us that right. We care too much.
Yeah, we're, like, too good at podcasting that we make other podcasters, you know, kind of feel bad about themselves.
And these are good burns on us, frankly.
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely sweating from the heat of these burns.
Yeah, I'm sweating for a lot of reasons.
I mean, we don't have anything even comparable to the royal family in, because they have no political power. They're just kind of figureheads that right. people like, right?
Right.
And if you, I guess you're really into the like Anglicanism, right? Or the Anglican Church.
Right.
You probably care a lot about
Church
them.
Of England. Yeah, I think it's more of a, at this point, it's a cultural thing, like a point of national pride, I guess.
Right.
More than it's, do they wield any actual power? They're obviously, it's funny, the Queen is actually the largest landholder in the world.
That's true.
By a wide, wide, wide margin, because it's things like, technically, the Queen owns Canada. Technically, the Queen owns Australia. And like all of the Commonwealth lands of the UK technically belong to the Queen.
Her Majesty.
Yeah. But it's a weird, you know, it's weird. It's kind of a weird setup because like those places govern themselves. Like this is, you know.
I mean, if she came in, could she like do stuff if she wanted to?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Like if she, you mean like what if she like. Showed up in Australia with an AK-47 and just started blasting roos out in the outback.
Yeah,
I think she could get in trouble for that. Blasting roos,
which is bullshit.
Yeah, any of us should be able to do that if we want.
Australia, what the fuck, dude? Thought you guys were cool.
Now, if she went to Canada with an AK-47 and started blasting roos, she would for sure get in trouble.
Yeah,
because those were all in zoos.
That's right,
in Canada.
I mean. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. You know, I think there's obviously a big. We're trying to talk about her as like a cannibal versus like some of this. You know, I think there's different conspiracies that are being woven into this here. Like we're focusing on her as a cannibal, but then there's also like the whole adrenochrome thing, and like you know, fucking pedophile rings and all that shit, and like
right.
satanic sacrificing of children and. Kind of like, well, okay, we're focusing on cannibalism here.
Right.
Does she eat people?
Right.
As a spiritual boon, do they feast on human flesh?
Yeah. I mean, and then also, Humdinger gives the credit for the Queen's long life, I guess, and vitality to
the Queen is beloved.
Human flesh. I guess my question to that would be, does this seem like a particularly vibrant person?
Yeah, she kind of just shows up places and like waves and sits down.
I do understand that she's old. I do understand that she's been on the throne for a while.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, she and I are definitely arm in arm for who can spend the longest time on the throne. Like battling in the Guinness Book of World Records.
One gold, one porcelain.
Yeah. I guess my question is, does anybody really think that like, wow, the Queen has so much energy? I mean, like you said.
Yeah, she's kind of like just, going out there and playing fucking soccer. It's like, oh, and there's the Queen. Yeah. She went out onto the pitch to play with the UK national team.
I mean, it's not like she's Vladimir Putin and she's putting on skates and people are letting her score 18 goals or whatever. Like, she's not, it's not anything
she's
weird.
Not walking around topless riding a horse, which I wish she would. Oh, my God.
Oh, stop. I can only get so hard. Ugh.
Oh, God. Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what else she does. Like,
people are like, oh, she can drive a car. It's like, old people can drive a car.
She's also getting the best medical attention.
It's not like they're
asking
her to get on the M1 and drive in, like, rush hour traffic or anything. Like, she doesn't, she's got a police escort and shit. Like, it's not like she doesn't.
She also is getting the best medical treatment that the UK has to offer.
Right. She goes...
And has for her entire life.
It's not like she has to, like, wait on the NHS for anything. Like, she's jumping to the front of the line.
All of her food is prepared for her. She's eating a nutritious, healthy life.
Right.
Having the best medical attention that money can buy. Anything. She's never want for anything in her life, ever.
Yeah.
And none of her family is.
Right.
They travel... The hardest thing they have to do is travel to Scotland to see the Scottish strength games, and they get to stay in their fucking massive castle there, and then they travel.
What is it, Balmoral?
Balmoral Castle, and they travel with their their butlers and their stylists.
Household staff.
And their entire staff.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a life of luxury. Yeah, of course you could make it to 92. It's a level of fuck ton of energy.
Is she 92?
I don't know how old she is. 90 something.
I don't even think she's 90 yet.
She's in her 80s?
I'm going to look it up. I'm going to look it up right now, Bunk Funkers.
This is another classic Bunker segment. How old is the Queen of England?
I'm gonna guess.
We do it once a year.
All right, let's submit a guess.
90.
And we'll see who's right.
I'm saying 90.
You're saying 90? I'm going to say that the Queen is 88 years of age.
Price is Right rules.
Closest without going over. Queen Elizabeth II. Oh, age 95, Art. You win.
Woo!
She's old as shit.
She's really old.
Born April 21st, 1926.
Okay, so I think maybe she could have still bought Mamiya.
Yeah, she might have been able to buy it from Merck. I mean, again,
as
her family is German. So, she is old. 95 years old. Still, I have to go back to saying, I don't think that I agree with everything that you said, Art. The Queen
receives
the absolute best in medical care, lives a life of luxury, and has for her entire existence. There's never been a point where she did not live
1924.
In luxury, I guess.
So she could not buy Mamiya. She was born 2 years after the final sales of Mamiya.
Oh, what a shame. What a shame.
So what were you saying?
You know, you can get a mummy if you want one. You want a mummy?
That's true.
Let me know.
You want some fucking organs by, you know. Well, honestly, I think that like even if she wanted organs by proper channels, it's like, I mean, what, are you going to bump the Queen?
Yeah. Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah. She sent somebody down to the morgue.
I feel like there's people probably lining up to donate a kidney to the Queen.
Yeah. I mean, I would think so.
Also, if
a lot of people have a lot of love for the royal family.
They do. And I mean, millions of people watch those damn weddings and all that stupid bullshit. I don't give a fuck. I mean,
yeah.
But why would she keep her meat, her human meat, packaged in clear, see-through packaging sitting in a freezer? Why wouldn't you obscure that even a little bit more? Because if any single person on the planet like came across that, I mean, I don't know.
I guess you just assume that everyone will make the same decision these constables did.
Sworn
they open
secrecy.
Your freezer and they see a human torso and they go, well, normally we would do an investigation and we would immediately arrest the person who had human remains
That's
in their
right.
freezer. But since it's the Queen, we'll let it slide.
We'll let it slide. We'll look the other way.
No reason.
It's just a coin.
No reason to identify this corpse or notify the family of this person who was killed or to do any other investigation. We'll just move on.
I'll do it all for the Queen.
For the
McQueen.
For McQueen.
Lightning McQueen. Lightning McQueen, the talking car. Do it all for him. He's got special privileges, he does. So if he wants to chug gasoline and eat a human, then so be it.
Ka-chow! Wow!
Which car is that?
Lightning McQueen! Wow! Ka-chow!
Owen Wilson does the voice of Lightning McQueen?
Yeah.
I've never seen Cars.
I never have either, but I know that. Owen Wilson does the voice of Lightning McQueen. You've got Larry the Cable Guy as Tow Mater. You have Paul Newman as
Paul
Doc.
Newman.
Doc. You've got, let's see, who else are the big characters?
I know nothing about this universe.
Cheech Marin plays one of the cars.
They have mouths. So how do they eat? Are they eating humans? Do the cars universe eat humans?
I don't know what's canon in the Cars universe. Again, never seen the movie. I assume they eat gasoline.
But do they chug gasoline through like their tailpipe? Like their butt? Like, I guess their tailpipes are their buttholes. But are they putting gasoline through their mouths or are they putting it through their gas?
I'm guessing they put it through their gas holes.
Gas holes.
Then
gas holes?
They put it through the gas hole And I think the mouth is just for talking and for their tongues. Because they do have tongues. They have teeth and tongues.
Andy, things that have teeth, that's a predatory trait.
Well, I think this is more of a cosmetic thing for the cars. I've never seen a car.
Evolutionarily, though, that the teeth means that they're biting things and chewing things. You don't need to do that with gasoline.
Well,
technically, all the Cars franchise should have teethless mouth. They should just have holes.
But
singular holes in the middle of their mouth.
Art, there's a fundamental flaw in your argument, which is that you're assuming that the cars evolved and that they weren't created artificially in a lab.
Who designed the cars?
That's what we don't know. We need a car's origin story. And this is one of the
who
biggest...
Who is their god?
This is one of the biggest gaping holes in the entire Cars franchise.
Excuse me, one of the biggest gas holes.
One of the biggest gaping gas holes. In the whole lore of the Cars franchise is how were the cars created?
I think this
because we know there was a Cars World War II. We know that there was a Cars atomic bomb. We know that there are some events that in the Cars universe that mirror ours. Is Cars in a parallel universe where all the people are cars? Or is Cars some sort of a creation of another person? Is this like a Planet of the Apes type of situation where it's Planet of the Humanoid Cars? We don't know. And it would be really nice if Disney Pixar
would. Oh, you damn dirty cars.
You blew it up, didn't you?
You blew it up, didn't you? You really got her done. You damn dirty cars. Get her done. Dr. Mazda.
Oh, Dr. Mazda.
I can play the piano. Well, I couldn't before.
Help me, Dr. Mazda.
I hate every car I see, from chimpanzee to chimpanzee. I don't know. I didn't.
From Toyota to Mitsubishi. Suzuki. There's nothing that's in Z, is there? Mercedes.
I hate every car I see, from Toyota A to BMW Z.
I think we need to use our audience to demand answers from the Pixar people.
Mm-hmm.
What is the lore of the Cars universe? Are these humanoids that were transformed in some kind of life altering event and they don't remember it? Is this a Matrix? Is they're a god? Are they living in a car simulation where they don't even understand that they're cars and they have a creator?
Is it just a parallel universe? A universe where almost everything mirrors what happens here in our universe, except instead of people, there are cars.
This is also two men who have never seen the Cars movie. Many of these answers might exist in the Cars.
John Ratzenberger plays Mac. You maybe remember John Ratzenberger also played the piggy bank in Toy Story. And was Cliff Clavin, the mailman from Cheers.
Now, I also want every single one of the actors involved in the Cars franchise to be held accountable. So I think that
Art and I have started a change.org petition.
Yep, that's right. answer some goddamn lore questions.
To either have all of the voice actors in the Cars franchise answer the questions about the lore and the origin of the Cars universe, or to be arrested and held criminally liable for the misleading of our youth.
Would you ever try human flesh?
No.
You ever think it would? Too weird for you?
I think it's a line that I don't want to cross.
Because you'd like it too much.
Yeah, I'm worried that I would get a craving for it.
Let's say in this hypothetical scenario.
Yeah.
Some person gave the okay. Hey, you can eat my body. I'm totally chill with that after I'm dead. Let people eat my body. Let's see what's up. Can you try a little bit?
No, I wouldn't do it.
There's a threshold. If we are starving on a deserted island and we eat a person.
Okay, context is important, yeah.
Context is important. People are okay with that. I'm trying to find the threshold to cannibalism.
Yeah.
When is it okay?
Art is desperate to find when it's okay.
Yeah, no, I have no other motive. I'm just curious. I'm asking for a friend.
All right. You and I both eat animals, right?
We eat them every day.
Let's just say, hypotheticals aside, is there a line for you with animals? Some people draw the line at horses, dogs, cats, animals that you might have as pets.
Right. Yes. There is, and it's fucked up. I agree. Vegans and vegetarians out there, I understand that it's a fucked up line between drawing between a dog and a cow. Because cows have feelings, they have emotions, they're very loving animals. Mm-hmm. They think, they feel, but we eat them.
Yeah.
But so does my dog. But I don't have a dog. I'm just saying, so does a dog that I would own, or my cat.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't think twice. I mean, I might pretend to eat my cat. I might take little nibbles out of him and tell him I'm going to eat him. And then he just kind of makes a funny cat face.
Yeah.
And he's like, what the fuck? I do weird stuff with my cat. I pretend to take little nibbles out of him. I go, my cat owners, what's up? You guys know what's up.
You guys all your cat owner,
you guys all chew on your cats, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is totally not weird at all.
The other day I grabbed my cat's foot. I tried to hold on to it, and he fucking smacked it. And then he gave me a dirty look. It was very funny. He actually did that this morning.
Cat stories.
But yeah, there is a line. There's a line. I won't eat. I would not even. I don't think I would ever try a dog. I just couldn't do it.
Why?
I don't know why. I don't know. It's the way I grew up. You, on the other hand, I know what your answer is. You're like, I'll fucking eat dog all day long.
I've never had dog.
You hate animals.
Yeah. I mean, to me, it's like.
You despise them.
I don't care. You know? It's like. To me, it's like one animal is just another animal, all right? Like, you know, some animals obviously taste better than others, or there's better quality.
I would eat a penguin.
Nutrition.
I don't give a fuck about penguins. I'll eat the fuck out of a penguin.
Would you eat a hippopotamus?
Yeah. Those motherfuckers kill more humans than anything. Fuck hippos. Fuck
them. We got to strike back.
We do.
Time for humanity to strike back.
These fucking hippos are out there fucking systematically murdering us humans.
It's time for us to strike back. We're already hitting back against insects. Insect protein is becoming more and more popular. It's gonna help hunger all across the world. Time for us to get some hippo ass.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'll eat insects all day long. I mean, it's weird, dude. It's like endangered species. I don't really give a fuck. I'll eat them. Here's the thing, though. I do kind of draw certain... I won't eat shark. Because I know, like, there are certain distinctions. I won't eat a pangolin. Okay?
Why?
Because they're just too cute and they're endangered. Okay?
Okay.
I won't eat a shark. I won't eat a turtle, probably. I have no desire to eat turtles. But frogs? I could eat a frog. I don't give a fuck about frogs.
What about something like, you know, in some countries, it's not that uncommon to eat things like hamster.
What countries?
Well, like I have a...
You're just saying that because you ate your fifth grade class pet. You came back from spring break. You were the one who was designed to eat, who had to take home the hamster over spring break, and you came back, you're like, Skippy died. Yeah. And the whole class was sad, but like really, you ate him.
He ran away. I did eat him. And it's time that I admit it on the air that I did eat Skippy, the class hamster. No, I said it wrong. It's guinea pigs. I have a friend who's from Ecuador.
That's right.
And in Ecuador, it's not so uncommon to eat a guinea pig. Would you eat a guinea pig?
I don't feel anything for a guinea pig. I'd eat a guinea pig.
So it's really all just based on your personal feeling toward the animal.
Yeah, okay. Pretty much.
Got it.
Pretty much.
But then I draw the line at human. Because.
Why?
I don't know, but it just feels wrong.
You'll eat any animal under the sun.
I'm saying, here I am.
But you won't eat something. You won't eat yourself.
I recognize the hypocrisy in it that I sit here. I say consent is the thing that makes it different than corpse medicine. People can donate their organs. They can donate blood. Everybody gives parts of their body away for medical. You can donate your body to science. You can donate your body so that you know, they'll cut you up in medical school so that people can do...
You can watch videos of it. It's on YouTube. It's gross.
Exactly.
You can look it up.
And this is a very real need in society. Medical students need to understand human anatomy, and the best way to understand it is to actually see human anatomy up close and personal.
Literally.
and they need actual cadavers to dissect.
Bunkfunkers, there are cadaver dissections on YouTube that you can look up. Actual real life dead bodies you can watch being cut up. And it's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable, but this is
I'm not cut out for it.
But if you're cut out for it. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Okay.
Stuck that one in. But the point is, there's real need for this. And here I am.
Here I sit,
Bunkfunkers. I tell you, I am okay with all of this because the person consents. Art's throwing the question back to me. If the person consents, please eat me. Even asks me, please eat my body when I die. And I'm going, I don't think so. I don't feel comfortable.
I would be tempted.
Why do I not feel comfortable?
I would be tempted because it's like such a crazy...
You'd be tempted.
Crazy thing to say, like, I've tried humans.
But I'm worried
isn't that
about...
fucked up?
I'm worried about then having to be able to tell people that I did eat human flesh once and I didn't have to. if it was a tale of survival, tale of survival, like you said, desert island, if this is a Donner Party type of situation, maybe worse comes to worse and you have to. Am I going to kill to eat somebody? Probably not. But would I eat them if they were dead? I might. If it was to save myself and they were already dead. Yet here's somebody who's going to say, eat my body. And I'll say, no, thank you. Because I don't want to afterwards somebody say, would you eat human flesh? And I'll be like, actually, I did it. I didn't have to, though. I want to make that clear. Not a survival situation. They just asked me to, and so I did.
I could have had salmon. I could have had it, but I decided to have the human instead.
I ignored it and had the body taken care of through any normal means. It could have been cremated. It could have been buried. No, I chose to eat it.
Oh, it's fucked up. I mean, now I'm imagining you. It's like, wow, next on Dateline, the harrowing tale of survival. Andy, and then it's just like, you're on there and you're like, yeah, I had to eat him, though. And I mean, it's like, everyone's like, well, geez. I get that Andy had to survive, but like he's not remorseful at all about the fact that he had to eat.
No, my next butcher box wasn't getting delivered for another 2 days, and I only had one pack of pork chops in the freezer, so I pretty much had to eat him. Here's the question for you.
The fucking delivery man.
We made the point a little bit ago, Art, about insect protein.
Oh, yeah.
Insects, right? This is part of, along with like other genetically modified foods, the insects like products are some of the things that are helping to address worldwide hunger.
It's incredible. They're so readily available. They can be farmed like no other kind of animal. The environmental impact is so much better than any other kind of animal. The protein is just as good as most like things that we're used to. The iron is better. They're healthier. It's just getting over the fact that you're eating bugs. And I've had cricket protein and I've had mealworms before.
Human beings die every day all over the world. Everywhere humans exist, humans
die. You're getting into a soil and green situation here.
We use a lot of resources taking care of places to store dead bodies. Think about cemeteries. Grass is inherently environmentally unfriendly. Those places have to be kept up. Nobody wants a wild looking cemetery. Burning bodies burns fuel. Should we be eating people when they die? Is that the right thing to do?
Oh God, do we ever get to a situation where that is a viable fucking
question? Is it morally wrong to, if people consent to it, that say, I allow my body to be used for food when I die? Is it wrong if
this
we did that?
It's just a societal rule.
If we say, harvest, I'm an organ donor, I'm a tissue donor, harvest everything you can medically from me when I die, eat everything else.
I think this is a societal...
Use my bones to make plastics.
We have
containers or something.
We have no remorse about taking some dead person's organ and putting it in your body to live. But when it comes to...
It's a great
to,
thing, in fact.
Yeah, it works perfectly.
It's a good system. We have to even... the demand is huge. We grow organs. They're working on growing organs in labs.
Yeah.
To be able to... So that people who are waiting can
and
get
certain
an
countries are genociding people and harvesting their organs.
Right, yeah.
They're not even waiting for the labs.
Yeah, Art is trying to tell you that he thinks it's a good system.
Why beat the rush?
I guess that's the thing. If you start saying, well, dead people can be a food source or there's profit to be made from dead people, does it
a fucked up line.
Does it lead to just more genocide? Because then there's an easy justification, quote unquote justification, for a genocide. Because you can start to say, you can start to rationalize it by saying, well, we had to help other people. This is the greater good kind of thing. I don't know. This is way too morally murky territory for us.
This got fucked up.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I do I ever think that we'll hit that point? Not in the near future.
But should we be doing it? Ever? Now? Should we do it
now? I don't know. I think we got other means that we can explore first.
Should we?
I think we have other means, like colonizing another planet and fucking that planet up. It's like super chill.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Let's start harvesting bugs and shit too. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, I really look forward to the days where we can just sort of planet hop and fuck planets up all over the galaxy.
Yeah, let's fuck up Neptune too. Neptune's next. We're coming for you.
Hey, dude, I'm getting ready to fuck up Uranus, dude.
Uranus is next. Uranus. Uranus is mine. Uranus.
Oh, God.
Uranus.
You're heinous.
We're heinous. We're heinous for Uranus. No, I don't think we need to start eating people. I think, but it's so weird that it's like human beings were totally chill with, like, it's a societal thing. There's nothing else. Like, if you grew up in the New World in some Native American culture or some other different culture, it's like, yeah, we eat our relatives because we gain their power. It's like, obviously nowadays, I think science has crept in a little bit more and we know that that's not fucking true.
Yeah, but we know that doesn't do anything and also that it's potentially probably unhealthy.
Yeah.
You know, because depending on what the person died of, like, it's probably not a great idea.
Right.
I think the real thing with Europeans, and this is true for most European history, is I think that corpse medicine gets back to the fundamental dehumanization of everybody who's not the European person, right? Because it's almost like you can, you know, at first it's like, oh, these are old Egyptian corpses. Like, they're not people anymore.
Who gives a fuck?
We don't care. These are long dead. And then it's like, well, it's the Irish. Nobody fucking cares about the Irish. And then it's like, eh, these guys were criminals. Who fucking cares? Redheads? Kyle, they're probably Irish. So it's like, you notice it's never just like, oh, well, if you're, you know, if your local MP died, like, you could eat his body and gain his power. It's like, no. We only want the dregs, the people that we can dehumanize so much that we don't have to think about them actually being people anymore.
It was like they need to have died a violent death. It's like, well, who's dying violent deaths?
Yeah.
The king ain't dying in a fucking violent... I mean, he might, but, you know.
Ask King Charles I.
Yeah, people paid fucking, like, I think... It was something like... It was like top dollar to get some of that dude's blood.
Oh, yeah. That was good blood.
When he got beheaded.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, if you took a little bit of King Charles I blood, you were probably feeling Oliver Cromwell after that.
You know what, just for that, I think I'm going to eat you. I'm going to eat you. You know what, go ferment and horse shit for that one.
Honestly, well, I might smell better.
I don't know, Andy. We've gotten far off track here. I think this is an interesting topic, but we have not even talked about if the queen is a cannibal.
There's just nothing.
Would we care? I guess we would care. That would be a massive... story.
It would be a massive story. I agree with you. I think
kind of fucked up.
It would be pretty fucked up to find out that the queen was eating human flesh. But I just have to go back to the whole thing. The underlying
why
reason
human flesh
is that it makes her somehow vivacious and vibrant. And it's like, no, this. I mean, for all the reasons that we said, this is a 95-year-old person who has the greatest medical care that the UK has to offer. The entire, you know, whatever, anywhere in the UK. On demand at any point, people watching her every move, studying her every ailment, a person who lives a life full of luxuries. It's no wonder that this person could be in good health at 95 years old. You know, if I had this kind of life, I could probably live to 65. Way exceeding expectations. But I also don't see the queen and go, oh, phew, she's strutting around like a 54-year-old. Like, I mean, it looks like a 90-year-old person. I mean, I said 88.
So obviously, yeah. I think I'm giving her 7 years, but
yeah,
I mean, still, it seems like a really old person.
Again, she just kind of walks around, waves, and then leaves. Yeah. Not like, again, she's not this fucking spring chicken.
I mean, look, I'm 75 years old tomorrow, and I have watched a lot of the Queen's life. And there's a clear, if I were to look at the Queen from 20 years ago to today, she looks a lot older. She looks older. She acts older. Everything about her is older. I don't see, if she is eating human flesh, eat more of it, because it's not doing the trick.
Fucking idiot.
Dumb fucking queen.
God stupid damn. Dummy.
God damn.
Lucky you're born the queen, because you wouldn't do jack shit if you were a commoner.
Yeah.
You'd be shoveling shit.
You'd be shoveling shit. You'd be working in the stables.
All right, let's get to verdicts then, I guess, Andy, because we're already here. We're already in the verdict land. We need to get out of this weird of world of questionable morality.
Yeah. So what we're rating the plausibility on to me today is the plausibility of the Queen of England being a cannibal.
Yes.
Right?
Corpse medicine was real. That was just history.
Yeah, that's just history. So there's nothing really to say there. I'm gonna give you a verdict that I think will shock you.
Okay.
Is the Queen a cannibal? Case confirmed. The Queen is, yes, a cannibal. Art's shocked. He's stunned.
What do you mean?
The machines of power that keep the monarchy elevated above everybody else. All it does is eat up and spit out human beings.
Oh, my God.
As though they are cattle.
Oh, Jesus fucking Christ.
Is the queen a cannibal? 100%. Is she actually eating human flesh? Probably not. Probably not. But I'm giving a very TJW sort of verdict here, right?
What a fucking verdict. Huh? Shout out TJW of the Pick Me Podcast. Pod.
TJ, let us know how I did on that verdict.
Wow. Bunkfuckers, I am stunned.
Oh, man, I broke Art's brain with that one.
That was the most Andy verdict I've ever been party to and witness to, truly.
Party, dude.
Geez, Louise, I don't even know how to follow that one up, Bunkfunkers, I'm just going to have to give my verdict. I do think, though, here's the thing, Bunkfunkers. I know some of you are probably sitting there saying, like, well, you got the fucking pedophiles and the adrenochrome and the blood and the fucking shit. Come on. It's like, we hear you.
We hear you. We don't know what you're saying, but we hear you.
We don't know what you're saying. Speak clearly.
Okay? Enunciate.
Enunciate your words. We're trying to talk about if she's a fucking cannibal, not if they're covering up massive pedophile rings within their family, not if they fucking do weird satanic rituals, or if they, you know, I don't know. She probably gets blood transfusions. Like, athletes and famous people do that shit all the time, and why do you think Keith Richards can still live? It's like,
yeah, he goes to Switzerland once a year or once every 5 years or something, and he has
his blood
completely flushed
from
his body and new blood put in.
It's kind of cannibalistic.
Yeah.
A little bit. You're not drinking it.
Because first of all, that's elective.
Yeah.
That's not, nobody's saying that, Keith, you have to come every so often and have all your blood flushed.
I guess it's not morally questionable because the people who are donating that blood are...
No. Say it's morally questionable.
You think it's morally questionable?
Because who else could have used that blood instead of Keith Richards, who's doing it purely, again, not for a specific health ailment,
right?
Other than to prolong his own life. I mean, in a way, to me, that's morally questionable.
I mean, if we take it at the fact of the Hubert Hundinger thing, I think the Queen isn't doing this for nourishment. Keith Richards, I guess, isn't doing that for nourishment. Well, maybe he is kind of a little bit, but it's more of like a power thing. Like, I can do this. Yeah. I can't afford to go to Switzerland, have my blood completely removed and redone so that I feel invigorated and I can live my life after I've fucking put my body through hell for most of it so that I can prolong my own life.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say plausible smidge.
Okay.
And I'm also going to say, case closed. Hubert Humdinger does not exist. It was a fabrication of Dear Dirty America,
yeah,
and does not exist. And in fact, I think that whole,
If you actually read any of that Dear Dirty America articles, there's a lot of like jokes thrown in there.
Some of this stuff seems tongue in cheek.
Silly. It's very tongue in cheek.
Yeah, like I you know, it's hard to tell at some point if
like he wrote the article and he's like, "We're still awaiting the constable's tell-all book." Rifling through the Queen's undies.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's very tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go case closed. I don't think Hubert Humdinger is real. There's no photos of him. There's no way in fuck that 367 books were wiped clean from the U.S.
Not from the U.S., yeah, but from the face of the earth so that none of them exist anymore.
Like, people can still get access to the Anarchist Cookbook and Mein Kampf pretty easily. So, right.
Yeah.
And those are pretty controversial books.
Yeah.
So I don't think anything that Hubert Humdinger said could ever actually be removed.
This would be like the first time in history, to my knowledge, that some piece of literature was wiped completely off the face of the earth since the fire at the Library of Alexandria.
Exactly. So, yeah. Case closed on that. But plausible smidge on the... Maybe the queen is adding. Maybe she's nibbled on a person before just because she can.
Ooh, why not? Why wouldn't
she? Because she could. She can do literally anything on the earth.
Get away with anything, huh?
You know?
Just do it.
You get power hungry. You just, you know, you get to that echelon of true power. True power. Can literally move a mountain. I mean, if she literally said, hey, dig up that mountain and move it to another location, probably could get done.
Well, I do it for McQueen.
Do it for the Queen.
For Lightning McQueen.
You might take a nibble out of a human just to say you can.
Just to show people that you're not fucking around.
You're not fucking around. But I don't think she has jagged teeth. She probably has very nice teeth.
She's got jagger teeth.
Yeah.
Queenie was a Rolling Stone.
Bug
Moss is growing on her skull. Rolling skull gathers no moss.
That's true. Those were our verdicts on Is the Queen a Cannibal and the History of Corpse Medicine. Let us know what you think. Email us, MrBunkerPod@gmail.com. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at MrBunkerPod. Find us on YouTube, youtube.com/C/MrBunkerPod. And if you feel so inclined, you have the means to do so, want to support the show, you can find us on Patreon, patreon.com/MrBunkerPod. $5 a month. We'll get you access to the Bunker Discord where you can chat with Andy and I and all the other bunkers. And you can get access to our Patreon-only show, Andy and Art Debunked, covering a lot of fun, weird topics, just like this one. New episodes every single month of that. Patreon.com/MrBunkerPod. Andy, well, another great topic where we talk about our weird, morally questionable beliefs.
Yeah. I mean, tell us what you think, Bunk Funkers. Use the hashtag. Wow, I want to say hashtag.
Oh, the hashtag. I forgot the hashtag.
I want to say hashtag fermented in horse shit.
Yeah.
Fermented in horse shit.
Fermented in
horse shit. Is that too long?
Sure.
Okay. But you seem okay with it?
Yeah, let's just do it.
Okay, fermented in horse shit. Honestly, this will probably become the tagline of this show.
That's true. This show is fermented in horseshit.
Conspiracy Time podcast. Fermented in horseshit. Quote, in quotes, fermented in horseshit. Attributed to Hubert Humdinger.
Oh, God. Well, I mean, that's the true tagline. Not what I'm about to say, which is for not the titular Mr. Bunker, but for my dentifrice.
Dental fries?
Dentifrice.
Dentifrice. I don't know what that means.
Sure. Co-host Andy Hart.
I'll have to look it up. I hope it's flattering.
Saying that was the whole enchilada.
Yummy.